To all the wanderers,
wanderers,
free thinkers,
and throwaway kids,
welcome to the dumpster fire.
Let's get dumpster diving.
And we're live. Justin, how's it going today?
It's going great. I'm looking at a deep dive today.
Yeah. Dive. A lot of research done into this. So.
Hey, what are we sipping on today?
Oh, I thought you'd ask. We have another Still House. This is a flavored whiskey, spiced cherry whiskey. You know the last one just impressed us so much. We just had to try it.
Well, I mean, you've got to give it its due. This is a clearance whiskey.
Now, I'm going to say this. I went to a liquor store the other day, and there is a peach version of this cherry whiskey. And it was $22 for an oil can, also in an oil can. And it was on the shelf below the top. So,
okay.
Hey, yeah. Maybe we judged a book by its oil can. I don't know. Let's try. I definitely flavored.
Yeah.
All right. A wee bit cough syrup, but good.
I get cough syrup out of that.
Definitely a Robitussin.
Yeah, that's straight Robitussin.
It may be Robitussin.
This might be a wilder night than we expect.
Are we robo-tripping? We'd be the judge, audience.
We'll know by the end of the night. a lot of new developments in the last week. Actually, in the last several days. We've got our Facebook group now. Anybody that's on there, thank you all so much. It's amazing to have that interaction with you all.
Yeah, we love our fans, and we want to keep on getting better at this for you guys.
Yes, we have your request lined up. We were very impressed with how the poll went. This, unfortunately, we had researched and put a lot into before just to make sure our references were on point. Because you know what? We're going to mess stuff up now and then. We're going to get a name mixed up. We're going to get one researcher mixed up for another. We're going to try to correct those on the Facebook page. If you catch them, please get on there, point them out to us.
We're always looking for constructive criticism.
Yes, and we're going to try to give book references on that page as well. And not just book references. We're going to give links to where you can go buy them.
Nice.
I think that's an important thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Link people up. Yeah. And another big thing we're wanting to look at is getting a mascot. So this is the idea. Mm-hmm. As of right now, it seems like all my cohorts here agree. We're thinking, I want you all to picture a griffin. The majesty that is the griffin, a lion-eagle hybrid. That doesn't really suit us. I think more of a raccoon-crow hybrid would suit the dumpster fire. So that's what we're envisioning. We've actually just lined up an artist to make this guy for us. And we want you guys to go onto the Facebook page and name him for us. The best name, that will be his name.
Yes.
So we're going to be doing a contest here. And maybe further down the line, the person that picked the best name, maybe we can get some merch going or something. So that's something in the future, maybe.
Yeah.
Once we get this logo off the ground.
So, yeah, big things. I mean, this really, really, this was just an idea in a passing conversation with Justin and I a few months ago. And I don't know why it just stuck. I thought, this needs to happen. And I told one of my foster parents that I used to work with the other day, I said, this is my new way to fix the world.
So, yeah.
Ambition. Why not aim high?
Yeah. Dream big.
I hope this touches people.
I, for one, am excited because I know the Throwaway Kids are going to be the best group that are going to come together to name this mascot and, I mean, just keep the love coming.
Like, yep.
I already know we have the best fans. A little biased, but just the amount of growth from the Facebook page and the amount of listeners, the amount of constructive criticism, the comments, the positive feedback. Throwaway Kids for the win, man.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah. I'm getting questions when I'm out in town now, and I absolutely love that.
That's awesome. Yeah, I want to spread this thing as far as we can get it. We want to dream big here.
Yeah.
We're just trying to spread some knowledge and spread some good conversation out there.
Yeah.
So I'm excited, and I'm especially excited for this particular episode. This is something I'm pretty passionate about.
Yes, he is.
We're going to be discussing animal intelligence today.
Yes.
Something I'm stoked about. This is one of my favorite things. We're going to get into perhaps how intelligence evolved on this planet and what animals we see having the highest intelligence, and we'll even break down into cognitive abilities and emotional intelligence of some animals. So you want to get right into it, I think.
I'm gonna get right into this first, actually. Okay. I've got a gift for you again.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah.
I'm feeling spoiled.
I am really trying to improve your wardrobe, sir.
Well, and part of this is Brian's love language. We could go into a whole other podcast.
That is a whole other podcast. We can talk about that. But this, I saw this, and it was just you.
That shirt was made for you.
There was no doubt that was perfect.
Oh, man. That is fantastic.
Is it not?
That is perfect.
So it's not a nostalgic band shirt. It's not anything big, but it's just...
It's beautiful is what it is.
Why don't you describe to the throwaway kids what that is?
It looks like a tentacled pineapple, which is just as weird as I am. That is fantastic. Yes. That one's going on right now.
Awesome. Another success.
Great success.
I feel like the dumpster fire's princess.
you can bring us gifts as well. So we just have to hold them back and get them while we're on the recording.
I do have a couple of tiaras if you would like to wear a tiara for being the dumpster fire princess.
We may have to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's never a birthday unless you come in a tiara.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well.
All right, let's do this. Okay, where are we starting? When I think of animal intelligence, the first thing I think of are my dogs. I've been training dogs for a long time. I've had border collies. My dad had. I've got corgis. Controversial. Corgis are smarter than border collies.
Yeah.
But they are stubborn jerks.
Yeah.
So they don't rank as high because they'll decide one day I'm doing nothing you ask of me and I'm going to go and wag my little butt into my kennel. And we've had that happen.
Which
with
they do have the most adorable butt. I don't even think that's a controversy.
The Momo.
That sounds like side note. Yeah. Why do they call it Momo in Japan?
Is it because it means peach?
Also, thoroughly kids, do not Google Momo. There is a very scary, like, I think Japanese monster also named Momo. Very creepy. Just warning you.
Yeah,
that might interest some of you, but. Several people have been like, why would you tell me to Google that? Because I thought I was just helping them out. No, there's some scary stuff on the interweb.
Yeah. So,
yeah, we've had a good list of the more intelligent dogs, and we've really seen that. I mean, just, they're smart. I mean, they're way more self-aware than most people would think. It's interesting, and I look back, and I really am baffled, and this is another discussion, but the domestic dog even exists like it does on the timeline we supposedly have.
Yes, it doesn't make sense on that short of timeline how we domesticated the dog.
So with the dogs, we do a lot of association, I think at least. So like what we do, so our corgi, we'll use her Tula, we can post a picture on the Facebook page. But basically with Tula, we can do your basics, sit, stay, bark, or speak, you know, paw. Well, I was bored. So now we have 7 dogs, which is harder to train, obviously, because each dog requires their own attention. But back when it was just Tula and another dog, Smokey, I'd get bored and just kind of sit and hang out with them and train them. So with Tula, we had our basics down. We could not get Smokey to stop barking.
Smokey
all
is
the
a
time. Bark, 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 bark. So what I started to do was when he would, I would praise him and say, good speak, good boy, and give him a treat. And you could see him kind of look at me like, whoa, 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 what?
Yeah.
So then he would bark and I'd like, good speak, good boy, give him a treat. And then I would lay off with the treats, but I'd still praise. And then finally I was like, no speak. And he caught it because he was like, wait a minute. And so he would not speak. And I was like, so then I'd praise like, no speak, good boy, you know, good boy. With Tula, I was like, we can get in some next level stuff because she picked up the paw, the sit, you know. We had her dance, you know, and that's just a hand movement, circular hand movement. So, okay, you know, not too advanced. So I was on, honestly, this is like early Facebook days. So right after MySpace, you know, flirting around with Facebook. And I saw somebody that would just do like, you know, bang, bang, and their dog would play dead. And I was like, well, I want Tula to do that. So how I did that was I would have her lay down, and then I did back. And the reason I chose back was because I thought back would be like bang. Mm-hmm. So I would physically put her on her back, and she didn't like it, but I'd be like, good back, good girl, and have Brian feed her a treat. And it got where I would also start to go, I would do like a gun motion, like flick it at her, I would go back. And then she got that, so I started then changing it to bang. Mm-hmm. And so that's how we did that. So that's one layer of intelligence that I was able to teach her that, associate it with it. We associated free with three, so I can have her put a treat down, and I can have her go, you can have that when I say three, and I can count to three, and she'll get it on three, because we always use the command free. Like when they're in their kennel, we put the food down, they don't eat until we say free.
Okay.
And so I knew that she already knew free, so three was not far off. My sister decided to tell me that Tula wasn't as smart as she was, and that she just knew that on the third one she could go. So I started adding in one, you know, I'd randomly put like one and a half, as long as it didn't have three in there, because that would be mixed signals. Yeah. But yeah, so I would do like one and a quarter, two, two and a half. So she never knew when three was coming, but when I say three, she'll come, and we've had her come across the house before. Like, she'll wait. So really? That's about the layer of animal intelligence I'd say comfortable with. So like, I'm comfortable with that because I've seen it, I've done it, and I kind of know a little bit about.
I would say your dogs are far more domesticated than I am. They're definitely more trained. I've gotten in deep this week on everything from bonobos to chimpanzees to elephants, which is a favorite of mine, and of course the octopus. One of the things I found that really blew my mind was the Asian elephant. They may be the most emotionally intelligent animal on the planet, and that includes us. Their hippocampus is about four times the size of ours, which is known to control emotion. And they have an entire society, a very matriarchal society. We've seen them hold funerals for their dead, and we've seen them, for older female leaders of the group, they will carry leg bones for even years after that leader has left. Another thing we've seen in elephants, both African and Asian, is altruism, which we as humans tend to view as something that is strictly human, is caring for another species without any benefit to yourself. We see it in elephants. Joyce Poole, who is a leading elephant researcher, she's the head of the Elephant Project out of Kenya. She witnessed in 8 years over 1,000 acts of pure altruism by both African and Asian elephants. Example she gives is she saw a fence builder in India. He had trained his Asian female Asian elephant to put poles in post holes. He would dig the holes and she'd fill them with posts. Well, he had dug the holes the day before, and they're going back to the work site. And she got to the fifth hole of the day, and she would not put a pole in it. Refused. And he switched her. He reprimanded her, and she still would not budge. Yeah. He looked down into the hole, and there was puppies in the hole. She absolutely refused to harm these puppies. And that's pure altruism. She had no reason in a natural setting to not want to harm those puppies. And that's something that's pretty mind-blowing, I think.
Yes, it is.
Another interesting thing I found is Kiko, a Korean elephant at Everland Amusement Park in South Korea, has learned how to mimic 23 Korean words. It goes beyond mimicry, though. She has started putting them properly into small sentences. She's grouping words together to communicate. And that's not something we ever thought we'd see in an elephant.
Wow.
You see... But we've known for a long time that the elephant was special. Even Aristotle, he observed elephants during his time in Greece, and he believed they surpassed all others in wit and mind. That was the actual quote, was the elephant passes all creatures, including man, in both wit and mind.
Yeah.
He believed they were more caring and loving than man. And I'm starting to agree.
Well, some things that I've known about elephants for a while is they have their own graveyards, and they have a mourning process for their dead.
Yes.
And I'd never heard of that with any other animal. I don't know if any other animal does that.
The only other animal that we know of that had a funeral process was Neanderthals. There is no other great primate that does any kind of funeral for their dead. And we have seen mourning of the dead in higher level primates like bonobos and chimpanzees, but not an actual ritual around the death of a member of the tribe, troop, or family. That's something pretty unique to us and elephants, and that's pretty mind-blowing. They have one of the highest cephalization equations on the planet, which is body mass to brain size. So humans have the highest. They are about third on the list, depending on which researcher you look at. They're third or fourth on the list. We know that chimpanzees and the great apes have a higher quotient than they do. The only ones that got them beat outside of primates is dolphins and whales. I think the fascinating thing is the hippocampus. That's really what makes the elephant stand out. That may make them easily the most emotionally intelligent creature on the planet. I think they know some things we don't. They're more emotional than us. They're more emotionally cognizant. So,
very peculiar thing about the human hippocampus. It is one of the regions of the brain that is easily shrunk.
Yeah.
It actually shrinks with any form of stress or anxiety that you have, but also uncontrolled diabetes. Mm-hmm. Can shrink that, and that tends to cause issues with self-esteem, mm-hmm. things like this, and then it can cause anxiety.
It's funny that you bring that up, because one of the things we've seen really over the last 20 to 25 years is rogue elephants. Rogue male elephants that are harming people and destroying villages throughout India and Africa. We've never seen that before. And the reason being, every time that they've looked into it, those are orphan elephants. We know that their hippocampus can be shrunk through post-traumatic stress.
They're no longer emotionally tied.
Yeah, they're a lot like us. We see the dissolution of the nuclear family here in our society, and we're seeing the results of that with crime and anger and a lot of post-traumatic stress. A lot of mental disorders come from that, and we see it in elephants. You guys could probably speak more on how humans are affected. That's kind of where your guys' expertise is.
We kind of joke about, which is, sadly, it's true. I mean, I can't say it's scientifically true, but I mean, observantly, it's kind of true, is that I kind of joke that you can't, I mean, no human is basically born out of the womb that's not automatically has PTSD and I think anxiety. I mean, when you look at our world, it's like basically being born, PTSD, anxiety.
Yeah. I got one last interesting fact about the elephant. They have prehensile penises.
Oh, another penis fact.
Well, that's going to be the thing. I was going to be like, hey, do you have the penis fact of the day, Justin?
Every woman I've told this to's eyes got to be the size of
her. I've heard this. They can move.
Hold on. They don't know what prehensile means.
Yeah, they can move them just like a trunk. And not only is it enormous, it is prehensile. They can do things that no other penis can do. Which is, it's the only example of the prehensile penis in nature.
It's almost like they selected their own evolution. We're going to be emotionally intelligent, gigantic, and our dicks are going to be able to be just move however we want.
Yeah, we're going to be able to do whatever we want.
We're going to flex on them all.
My dick works really well.
Yeah. Elephants for the win. Yeah. But no, through my research, I came across the Oliver the Humanzee. That's something you guys can look up. I'm not going to really tell you a whole lot about him, but definitely look him up. That's an interesting case. It's a chimpanzee that lived a whole lot like a man. He walked upright. He smoked cigars.
I hate to interrupt. Sorry. Was he raised by like a college professor and his graduate students?
No. I know what you're talking about.
That's a different case.
Yeah. That's a different case.
I don't believe that turned out well.
It did not. Very aggressive and because was it the 70s?
Yeah, it was the 70s.
And they raised this chimpanzee as a baby, as a human baby, and then you know he grew up. And of course, they're like, "Oh, we're shocked that you love cigarettes." This, well, drugs are fun. No, duh. Like that's why people do them. Yeah. And if you're, you know, he's still an animal. Humans are animals, so yeah, he's gonna love the cigarettes you give him. Like, duh.
Yeah.
But I could be wrong, because when I was studying at IU, they kind of glazed the surface. It was one of those like, we'll talk about it, but not much. I want to say he really harmed, because it was mostly female graduate students, because he wanted mothering roles, but I want to say he really hurt them.
The thing that freaks me out about chimpanzees is that you always see chimpanzees at a certain age.
Ooh,
when they're
babies.
Still juveniles.
Yes.
Michael Jackson's chimp is one that I always think about, because I have seen that chimp now, and as chimps age, they look shockingly human.
They do.
When they start going bald, and they get male pattern, it would be chimp pattern baldness, but it follows the same lines we do.
It does.
They're only like 2% off of our DNA.
Yeah.
That 2% is a big difference when you look at their bone mass and their muscle mass.
They're unbelievably strong. I think they said they're 5 times stronger than the strongest human.
And the most intelligent primate I came across was the bonobo.
Yes.
Kanzi, a 26-year-old male bonobo out of Des Moines, Iowa. According to Sue Savage Rumbaugh, was able to communicate by the use of 13 different words in his lifetime, English words. She believed that he could have learned more had he had the actual structures in his voice box and his palate actually form the words. He learned a combination of those 13 words in sign language, and he could actually translate what she said to him to the rest of the troop. And amazingly, his child... Which, see if I've got in my notes what his what the child's name was. I believe it was Matata. His child, he taught to speak those same 13 English words.
Yeah.
So that's pretty amazing. That's shared information between two completely different species change a society of one.
When you said about like the structure of the voice box and the palate, think about when you have a native speaker of a language and you learn another language as human to human. So like humans learning two languages that humans speak. Like people make fun of it. Like, you know, you have the generic, like if an Asian speaks English, when English is not their first language, they never heard like the L sound growing up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they don't, you literally cannot hear it. You know, you cannot physically do that. So
when that encodes.
The fact that you have different species that are picking up any words, you know what I mean? The fact that they're doing that is just amazing.
Well, bonobos, in my opinion, are the ones that should have been studied more than chimps. I don't know how chimps became like the forefront to study against humans, because bonobos behave in many ways more like humans. And one of the big ones is their sexual habits are much more human than chimps. Chimps are actually very aggressive, violent creatures.
They really are. That's one of the things. They're force copulators. That's one of the areas that chimps differ greatly from us is the how they interact sexually. And they tend not to... pair off like we do. They tend to have multiple sexual partners, where the bonobo does pair off. They tend to mate for life. There is evidence of bonobo divorces after so many years. A pair will split ways. They'll have an argument.
He should have put those dishes up.
Can't talk to her like that. She can't stand when he uses his English accent. She's like, "You're talking human again." He's all uppity.
Yep.
He's better than us.
Yeah. Now, something that kind of freaks me out, I got to be honest.
Is it the bonobo penis?
No. It's the... Let me see where it was. Okay, so in southeastern Senegal, in a place called Fongoli, we've seen female chimps using spears. This was in, we've witnessed this several times now, but it started in 2014. We are literally watching them evolve. And it's funny because most of the researchers expected it to be the males because they tend to be the more aggressive, and they tend to do not all the hunting, but most of the hunting.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, it's the females that are caring for the young. Who's disadvantaged when it comes to hunting? When you have young on your back, you're the one who's disadvantaged.
Mm-hmm.
So you're the one who needs the tool. So we see these female chimps, they're creating spears to hunt bush babies, which I was not aware that that adorable creature is a huge part of a chimp's diet. they're using spears, and not only are they using spears, observed in 2016 of the same troop of chimps, they are literally feeding scraps from their kills to pack of wild dogs on the forest floor. These dogs, they think they're doing this so that these dogs will tree the animals because the chimps hunt in the trees. And so they're actually using dogs. It seems to be just this one troop that we've observed these behaviors. We've been observing several other troops of chimpanzees, but we've not seen them do an either of those things. So either this is a really advanced group of chimps, or we're literally watching evolution happen. And it would be foolish to think that evolution hit us and just stopped. I think we're seeing it. And then you take into consideration, a little lower on the scale from chimps, bonobos, and elephants, we get to corvids, ravens, crows, jays. Yes. They're tool users.
They're collectors.
They're collectors and tool users. There is one murder of crows. I like to say flock because my crows are innocent until proven guilty. murder of crows in New York City that literally crows do not eat walnuts in the wild. Their beaks will not crack the shell of a walnut. One murder of crows in New York City does. They literally are dropping these walnuts in traffic, letting us run them over, and then they're going down and getting the nut meat. And there's been several studies done, hundreds at this point, of studies done with particular murders of crows being taught how to use puzzle pieces to get a treat of some sort, to get a food source. The most advanced that we've seen was a 9-part puzzle that it took 3 tries for an entire murder of crows to figure out. 3 tries. They figured out a 9-part puzzle to get the food. That's amazing. This researcher, he had been working with the same murder of crows in his own backyard, and he hid 7 exactly weighed stones that they would need to put in a certain beaker to raise the water level. And there was 2 more steps after that involved in pulling a string. Took them 3 tries to figure this out. I think crows know a little more than what we give them credit for.
Crows and parrots are
some
of the only birds that can learn to talk.
Yeah.
I did not realize crows could talk until I heard one talk.
Yeah, well, with crows talking, I just found this in my research. I had learned that crows talk because Charles Dickens had one, and I'm a huge reader. But you have to actually clip. Their tongue is too attached. You have to clip their tongue for them to get to talk. The difference, macaws in particular, and crows and ravens will, instead of just parroting back in mimicry, they will form their own sentences. Once they understand the language, they will literally form their own sentences. Nothing complex, but they will use the language.
Well, yeah.
That's much different than just mimicry.
Yeah, you've got Alex, the African gray parrot, who they still say he was an anomaly. There's some of them that are really smart, but he was an anomaly, and he was a complete alpha male jerk. Yeah. They talk about how dominant he was.
What I love about Alex is when they went to train him, they were actually, I want to say, correct me if I'm wrong, right? They were training the other.
They couldn't get him to listen. He was stubborn.
Yeah,
but if they trained the other parrots, he would
and
get so jealous.
The other parrot. Or parrot. Parrot.
Yeah.
Sorry. They would praise the other parrot for doing something right. And all of a sudden, they said they literally watched us be like, no, no. Like, I want that attention. Like,
yes.
And he did not, like, he didn't respond if you gave him food as a treat, but if you withheld that affection. And it was like, you know, oh, Justin, you're doing such a good job. Brian's over here going like, I'm doing a good job.
Screw you.
I'm doing a
good job. And that's, I mean, that's competitive hierarchy, and it worked for him. He actually called a fruit a banapple.
Really?
And that was when they were like, okay, wait a minute. He realized the texture's different from this, like a mango or something.
Yeah.
It's more like an apple and a banana together. And when I saw, I've watched him. I've watched him speak sentences, want to go to bed, things like that. And it is, there's no doubt. I know there's some controversy that maybe they had like overly trained him to do that. No.
Yeah.
I don't buy it.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think it was real. I think he was a rare breed. We've had many dogs, and you'll get one now and then that's just...
And there's always outliers.
Yeah, he was an outlier.
There's always outliers. I mean, look at us. I mean, they're genius amongst us.
Yeah.
So that's a topic we'll be covering on another dumpster dive. But there are definitely outliers in every population.
Every population.
I don't think you can talk about the intelligence of animals without bringing up Coco the gorilla. Coco the gorilla, for most of you, she's very famous. You probably know her. She raised kittens. She spoke in American Sign Language.
Yes.
The most interesting thing I found about her, I believe, is in 1992. I might have the year wrong. She was depressed. Her kitten had died, her first kitten.
Aww.
And she was depressed. She wouldn't come out of her enclosure, hadn't eaten in 2 days. They were really worried about her because, I mean, you can die from a broken heart. And Robin Williams showed up.
Mm-hmm.
He came to the rescue. And he went into her enclosure without a trainer. He told her a joke. He whispered her a joke. She signed the laugh symbol multiple times and the heart symbol,
aww,
the I love you symbol multiple times, and came out of her funk. Robin never told a single soul the joke he told to Coco the gorilla.
That is,
that is true humor. When you, that's interspecial. Interspecies humor. You can make a gorilla come out of depression. You are a beautiful soul, and God bless that, man.
Robin Williams, Bill Hicks.
Yeah.
She was told he passed that she signed that she was sad.
Yeah.
I was able to say, like, you know,
yeah,
because she remembered it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. He visited her multiple times. They were friends.
Well, I know. This is not as interesting. Well, I don't want to say not as interesting. This is a little off topic. Circling back.
Circle back.
When we were talking about, like, the tools and this and that, so I had the amazing opportunity when I went to IUPUC to have Dr. Courtney Bender be one of the professors I had. And thing was, is like, and Dr. Courtney Bender, if you this somehow reaches you and I say something incorrectly, please correct me. I don't want to say anything wrong. She basically, to give a little background, she was like, I want to study dolphins. So they say, Courtney, you got to go to school for marine biology. Okay, she does it. Gets her bachelor's in marine biology. She's like, all right, I want to study dolphins. I want to train dolphins, this and that. And they go, Courtney, you should have got a psych degree. She's like, well, what the crap? So she goes for her master's, I think, and then subsequent doctorate. Wants to do, like, animal behavior, you know, studying animals. Dolphins were her main, her love. Goes down to Florida. As a grad student, she had to study several hundreds, if not even thousands of hours of this camera footage of these dolphins in the wild. So they basically, you know, would follow the pods. It was her that went to her professor at the time and basically was like, what I'm noticing is they were basically trying to say these dolphins were mean. They were toying with the food before they ate it, and sometimes they'd let it go.
Yeah.
And Courtney was like,
so they're
look.
Cats.
Right. So they were trying to say dolphins are basically being cats. They're torture.
Yeah.
You know, they torture the seal, the baby seal, before they let it go. She was like, watch. They don't do that unless their young is present. And he was like, what are you talking about? So she basically gets all this evidence. She was the one that essentially proved, and keep in mind, I meet her in Columbus, Indiana.
Yeah.
She proves this down in Florida, getting her master's or doctorate, okay? And the fact that I get this in, you know, the early 2000s, mid-2000s, in Columbus, Indiana is amazing, because I'm taking this class at IUPUC. She basically proved that the mothers were teaching their young how to hunt those baby seals, but there was no point to kill them because they didn't need the food.
Yeah, that's amazing.
So, yeah. That's so amazing. She proved that under in her graduate studies.
One of the things I found on about dolphins, and you can actually find videos on YouTube about this, there's one particular pod of dolphins in the Gulf Coast, of all places, that it's the only time we've seen this behavior. Literally, they will hunt fish in shallow waters, entire schools, and they will circle them while slapping their tails on the floor of the sea, creating a mud ring around them so the fish cannot see, and the fish will literally jump out of the water to try to get over this ring of mud, and there's open mouth dolphins waiting for them on the other side.
Yes.
They create a little smoke screen trap.
I love it.
I thought that was pretty interesting. They actually stumbled across they've not released any of the information yet, but you guys can look into this and follow it. I learned about this through the Smithsonian. UC Berkeley is currently, and it is a 20-year study. It started in 2015. They believe that there may be some telepathy going on with dolphins. And that's being researched right now.
You know, it would almost seem, I would wonder if it's electrical signals, because all kinds of stuff down there produces electricity.
Yeah.
Bioluminescence is a big thing.
And you're in the water. Yeah. I mean, electricity travels well through water.
Infrasonic sound. That's whales use that. We know that because the big arrays that they were using for the Navy.
Yeah.
They were thinking those might be causing problems.
Isn't there a signal they can't identify in the ocean that they try to blame on, like, the transatlantic cable? The moan. And they're like,
There's a moan.
Yeah, the moan.
So, fascinating thing about dolphins.
Yeah.
We made friends with a lady. She was probably 18 years old. And she looks at me, and we were both young at the time, and says, I'm going to be a marine biologist.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, that's cool. I mean, we all said we were going to be something, right? I don't know what I was going to be, an astronaut. I don't even remember that. She, to this day, is a marine biologist.
That's awesome.
Her name is Heather. She lives in Chicago now. She lived down in Florida. We still keep in touch with her frequently. She's just an amazing person.
Beautiful person, beautiful soul.
She is. She is a marine biologist that trains dolphins, does dolphin shows. And through our friendship with her, we have gotten to actually do direct work with dolphins. We've got to feed them and tell them to do tricks. We got to witness how attached they get to people.
Really?
How excited they got to see her. And we also got to see sea lions, and we were the first people to take pictures with the penguin Fat Boy at Fat Gulf Boy. World, where she was working. Gulf World is an amazing place too. In the panhandle, every now and then, it gets very cold. And this is hit or miss. I mean, obviously, weather patterns change a lot. I mean, we go 12 years with hardly any hurricanes and then back to back.
Yeah.
But whenever the cold hits at the wrong time, the turtles will get cold shocked and they sink down and drown.
Really?
So Gulf World and several other places, Elon Musk actually, his facility helped with this. They brought a generator and stuff. They will have their volunteers go out and pull those cold shocked turtles out.
Yeah.
And put them in warm tanks to keep them where they can breathe so they can let them back out.
That is so amazing.
What's
it's amazing.
Cold shock mean? Like, help our listeners
so
out.
Turtles are cold-blooded. They have to have a certain temperature to operate. And when they get down to a point, they literally go into torpor. They stop. They sink straight to the bottom.
Okay.
Now, if you're a fish and you're cold shocked, it doesn't matter. You breathe very slowly. Your system slows down. Turtles can't do that.
Yeah, you lower your heart rate and everything.
Yeah. So
that's crazy.
I think something awesome too in speaking with Heather and learning about Gulf World and the Gulfarium and things of that nature. There was that documentary that came out, Blackfish, and of course, when you watch it, and granted, I think one thing to always take in mind when you're watching a documentary, look at the source and look at what they're doing. They're trying to sway your opinion. Yeah. I mean, they are. And so after that, I was like, well, F this, F that. Like, they're all evil. But then Heather was, it was awesome because she was able to explain, like, you need to realize what goes into keeping an animal in confinement. So, like, in these, you know, like, captivity. They have the government come out, evaluate these animals. Yeah. And their whole goal when they get an animal in there is to get them back to the wild.
Yeah.
They don't want to keep them in.
Yeah.
They want them to go back. And when an animal cannot go back, it's like, let's give them the best life we can give them here.
Yeah.
And so a big thing too, there's, you know, wage laws and there's labor laws for humans. They essentially have the same for these animals. So we watched her with this sea lion and this thing's huge. First and foremost, you really don't get an appreciation for this until you have an awesome friend like Heather that lets you go backstage. And all of a sudden, you're sitting there and he glides out on their little patio they have for him that comes right out of the water. And basically the equivalent of a like school bus comes and sits next to you without making a sound. And it's just like, yeah, you could bite my head off if you would like to, yes, sir. So she's just interacting with this guy and high-fiving him and feeding him fish and, like, almost like inside jokes. Like, I mean, she, yeah, would, you know, do a hand gesture and, like, he would love it. And, like, what do you want to do next? And she flat out said, she was like, some days the sea lion show is canceled because he doesn't want to work and we don't make him. Like, it's, yeah, hey, come on. But it's also his interaction. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's not left to be alone all the time. But, like, he loves it because he loved her. She treated him well. He's, you know, getting treats, hanging out. People applauding for him. So yeah, that's really awesome. Just learning the whole like kind of science behind it of like what it takes to keep an animal in captivity and like how much they try to rehabilitate and get them back out.
And Heather definitely, I will never say the names, but she definitely had some places where she was like, they're unethical.
Yeah.
But again, it's the inefficiency of knowledge and people don't know that there's been all these things change and that it's not all or nothing with this stuff, right?
Yeah.
Like, they had many turtles in there that had cut off flippers and stuff like that. Mm. They're never going to be able to survive in the ocean. They're going to get,
yeah,
they're going to be eaten. And
yeah,
so they were deemed by the government, not by Gulf World, that, mm-hmm, they had to stay there.
Yeah. Well, we went to Shedd Aquarium, thanks to her, up in Chicago.
Yep.
Because of
the turtle with the buoyancy issue.
She works at a zoo in Chicago. So we got to go hang out there at the Brookfield Zoo. Highly recommend.
Absolutely.
And
ask for Heather.
When we were there, we went to Shedd Aquarium because they're part of like a, I don't want to say conglomerate, but like they're kind of like, oh, your employees can get into here for free. And they've got this beautiful circular tank in the middle of Shedd Aquarium. And it's got this poor sea turtle. Beautiful. Her butt will not come down. Like her, yeah, butt's always in the air. And it was basically hit by a propeller type thing and rescued. Yeah. But it's just great because you see this turtle and it's like her butt's just straight up in the air. It's adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. So
that's awesome.
We got to see behind the veil, man. That's, uh-huh, that's to me, that's a big part of my life. Like, I want to understand things at that deeper level.
Yeah.
That's what I look
for. That's kind of what this podcast is.
That's what this whole thing's about. Now you all know this.
Yeah, we're just trying to peek behind the veil, trying to meet where the rising ape meets the fallen angel. Mm-hmm. Try to get down to the heart of the matter. That's always been one of my personal goals, and I know it's been one of yours, and I'm glad it was able to come together in this way.
Yeah.
It's super interesting stuff. I absolutely love sea turtles, and seals kind of crack me up because they really are the doggos of the of the ocean. You see them running around on land on all fours, and you're like, that's a puppy. Like, it's just a puppy. It's a giant puppy, but it's a puppy. I think that's really cool.
Giant slick puppy.
Yeah, a giant slick puppy. But yeah. So that brings us to octopuses. I'm sure you all heard my rant about octopuses.
Justin, it's not octopi.
It is octopuses. Do not let anyone correct you.
I have to tell you this.
This is adorable.
I get a message at about 2 in the morning.
Yeah.
Says, hey, my wife's looking up the plural of octopuses. Like, okay.
The plural of octopus, yeah.
She's not happy. Like, why? He's right.
I told you.
I loved it, man. I was just like, hey. And that just, I loved it because it was comical.
Yeah.
It's a great friend of mine reaching out to me. I don't care if it's 2 a.m, whenever you guys need me. But
that's adorable.
It just let me know that they cared.
Yeah.
Not only did they listen to the podcast, they did what we asked.
Yeah.
Look into our shit.
Yeah, keep us honest.
Look into what we're saying. Yeah. Look into it. If we're wrong, get fired up and look deeper into it than we can.
Yeah.
Let's do it. So, and, octopuses. Yes.
Octopuses, one of my personal favorites. They're probably the weirdest thing on the planet, I think.
Yes.
Shy of funguses. They have 9 brains. I mean, science does not understand the octopus. And we're getting closer with people like Peter Godfrey Smith, who's a philosopher of biology out of Australia. He's written 2 books on animal intelligence, one strictly about cephalopods and octopuses, called Other Minds, and another called Metazoa. That was more recent. That was either 2019, 2020. So very recent. But he's kind of on the cutting edge. We've always thought of octopuses as a solitary creature. And then we found Octopolis. Peter Godfrey Smith and his team discovered exactly what it sounds like.
Octopolis.
It is an octopus city off the coast of Australia.
No way.
Thousands of octopuses hang out here.
So they're organizing.
They're organizing. I think it's just a matter of time before we realize there are overlords. And I'm ready and willing. They got 9 brains. Now, I think I talked a lot about Sophia last time, which is one of my favorite octopuses. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I mentioned Otto. Otto, another spirit animal of mine, it was a cantankerous bastard. He's no longer with us. He was out of San Diego. So the room that they were keeping him in had multiple aquariums in it, and they kept on having these high dollar saltwater fish come up missing.
Yes.
And they were convinced that it was an employee stealing them.
I only laugh because I think I know where this is going.
So they installed cameras. It turned out Otto was literally crawling out of his aquarium, crawling 17 feet to another aquarium, eating the fish, then crawling back to his aquarium so he wouldn't get caught. Another fun fact, the head of the aquarium every morning would have to walk through Otto's room to get to his office. He went through Otto's room, then down like 22 feet down a hallway to his office. Well, every morning he got to where he'd throw a piece of shrimp into each tank as he walked by. Octopuses love shrimp. Well, one morning he's thrown a shrimp into all the octopus tanks and he makes it to his desk. About 5 minutes later, a piece of rotten shrimp hits his desk. He looks up to see Otto the octopus crawling away. This shows you so much about their intelligence.
Yes.
He knew that he doesn't eat rotten shrimp, and he knew who was responsible for getting it fucking right. he returned that shit. And
dude,
that's amazing.
He literally told the server, go tell your staff to fix this right now.
Like, what's up with this?
He literally asked to speak to the manager.
He did.
He was a Karen.
He went to the manager.
He was a Karen. So they kept on having lights go out in the room. Well, it turned out they watched the cameras. They knew it had to be Otto somehow. Otto was shooting jets of water out of about 1.5-inch seam at the top of his aquarium to knock the light bulb out. Well, they said
like MacGyver?
Yeah. Well, they said that's an easy fix. We'll just put a glass shell over the light bulb. This motherfucker figures out how to shoot water at the light switch itself. They're nocturnal.
That
light was pissing him off, and he said, "I'm not going to stand for it." He tried to escape over 17 times, quite successfully. Actually, he nearly made it out of the building one of the times.
Oh my gosh!
The air ducts. He is a. We've never found an octopus-proof aquarium.
Yeah.
We've never have.
Yeah.
They can fit through any crevice. Big as their eyeball. That's the only part of them that is not completely protean. They have no bones. They have no shape.
They're aliens.
They are. I'm leaning more and more to it.
I have done.
You guys know mine, aliens.
I've done the biggest dive into this, and I was like, listen, if I were going to invade a planet, this is the form I would take.
I mean, it's the form I would like to take.
70% of the world is water. We got to be water-based. We need to be able to fit in any crack, any crevice, anywhere and hide. There's sharks and things.
Yeah.
I said this in our first brainstorming. Aliens came. They're octopuses. I said the wrong term. They built the pyramids, you know, for the Egyptians. They're like, listen, bro, like, we're going to take the sea, you take the land, don't fuck with us. And we're fucking with them by putting them in these aquariums.
Yeah.
And there's an uprising.
Polluting their water.
Octopolis or whatever is an uprising.
It's Octopolis uprising. Will rise. And I say, hail our new overlords.
Hail.
Well, I don't know that I even mind. I mean,
Cthulhu, so I guess, what was he?
I have a couple of questions. Octopus dragon. I have a couple of questions, and it might be a Justin can answer, or it might be a throwaway kid. If anybody can answer this, if you don't mind doing some research, because I established last or two episodes ago, like, why we dumpster dive. I'm quite lazy, so if you'll do the research for me, I would appreciate it.
She's quite busy. Let's not call it.
What is the amount of money that Otto cost the aquarium with the exotic fish that he ate?
Not sure. I know it was several thousand dollars.
And then how long can the octopus hold its breath, essentially, to escape? So, like, what are we looking at?
Not long. A lot of octopuses die every year in aquariums because of
them. Trying to escape, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. It's as much them drying out. I mean, they are water. It's as much them drying out as not being able to breathe.
Now, subsequent question. You know how people build, like, the hamster tubes around their house and the cat thing? What if we build just, like, all of, like, the water-filled tunnels around all it? Like, let them just go slower.
I think they're probably working on that themselves. One fascinating thing about octopuses.
Oh, we got you!
Oh, I slipped up.
Throw away kids. Justin made a goof. It's not going to happen much.
Broke your own rule, sir.
Octopuses. Their suckers have more sensory information than we do in our entire bodies. When an octopus touches you, it can tell your blood pressure, it can tell your hormone levels, it can tell you everything about your chemistry. Each sucker, and the average giant Pacific octopus has millions of suckers. There was a female octopus, I'm not sure of her name, in Boston. It wasn't Sophia. I'm not sure of her name. She was being researched through the University of Boston. And the third shift researcher, octopuses tend to get attached to individuals. They get inside jokes with individuals. They tend to greet individuals in different ways. Well, the night researcher, every night, this octopus would wrap a tentacle around her left breast and flash red and white. Well, red and white's their pissed off colors, but she never did anything other than wrapping her tentacle around this girl's tit and flashing. She'd do it for a couple seconds and stop. So she just thought this was her greeting for her. 2 years later, she's diagnosed with breast cancer in that breast. This octopus had been trying to tell her something was
danger
wrong.
Danger, Will Robinson, danger.
She was telling her, there's something wrong here with this ditty. We need to get this taken care of.
You need to check this out. I got these sensors. You don't understand. Yeah. I'm trying to share with you right now.
And
turn that damn light out.
One of the things people don't realize, every octopus on the planet has enough venom to kill you. Very rarely does anyone die from an octopus bite, and it's because they choose not to.
This is interesting. I saw they
know you're not prey.
Yeah.
They have no interest in killing you unless you're threatening them. So why would they? So when an octopus touches you, that's a big thing. It's learning more about your body than you will ever know.
And
your life is literally in its hand. At that moment. So that's one of my personal dreams.
Talk about, like, psychic mind melding right there. Like, this makes me wonder too, like, if they can tell all that from their sucker, are we the ones that are inferior that we can't mind meld with them because we don't have the appropriate response?
So the octopuses, one of the things that Peter Godfrey Smith was able to prove anecdotally, still needs to be researched for several more decades to be proven, but what he was able to prove in other minds is that he, that they do edit their own RNA. They choose how they mutate. I mentioned this before.
We have nothing like that.
Yeah, we have nothing like that. They're so far up the evolutionary chain from us. I actually read one theory when I was deep diving in this that I believe it was on Reddit. Someone's theory was they are what we will evolve into.
Yeah.
That they are us just a couple million years
ago. Can I just say that I'm a little pissed that I'm here now and not that, I want to be an octopus.
Do you remember the movie K-Pax?
I do.
When
I love
the end
that
he says
movie.
why would you come here as a human? He says, because it's the most efficient shape.
Yeah
it would seem to me the earth is 70% water. You can fit into any crevasse.
He got it wrong.
You are the most efficient shape.
Yeah,
you need 8 arms.
Yeah.
We have 2.
Yeah,
things
you can create a knife
in
a pinch.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, that's I think that's the dive on animal intelligence. That's,
I think so. I mean, it's a fascinating thing. I think we consider this abstract thought we have to be intelligence, but if they have a mastery of the world around them and an understanding of it that we don't have, they have something we don't.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I love about Peter Godfrey Smith's research is he believes we have to change the way we gauge, measure, and understand intelligence.
Yeah.
He said this top-down approach doesn't work. Like I said earlier, if you judge a fish by how well it climbs a tree, you'll always think that fish is stupid. We've got to change the way we look at it. I think they're far more efficient in their environment than we are.
Yeah.
And they have a mastery of their body in a way we'll never understand. We will never be able to consciously edit in our own RNA. I think once we do, we'll become octopuses. And so for all the dumpster divers out there, throwaway kids, if you want to do a deeper dive on consciousness and what all that means, I can't recommend Other Minds or Metazoa more.
Yes.
They're both beautifully written. He's an incredibly passionate writer. But they're so thoroughly researched, and you're talking about cutting edge research.
Yes,
this guy is brilliant. Peter Godfrey Smith. He's done a couple TED talks as well. Read those books. They are absolutely brilliant. They will blow your mind, and you'll have fun facts for parties. So,
yeah.
Oh, I do have an octopus
Ladies
penis fact.
Oh,
let's hear it.
So, as you know, most female octopuses lay eggs, and the male separately fertilizes them. There is one species of small octopus, I can't remember the species at the moment, that the male literally rips his penis off and throws it at the female so she can inseminate the eggs herself. So he literally tells her to go fuck herself.
No, wait. Throwaway kids, I got a challenge for you. Let's go ahead and start awarding some points. Points are going to be given if you can tell Justin the name of that breed or species of octopus.
Yes.
That literally tells its mate to go fuck itself. I think some points are going to be given if you can answer any of the questions that were asked in this podcast.
Oh, yeah.
So let's get a points challenge going. I'm not necessarily going to tell you what the prize is because I've not talked about it with my cohort here. But
she's putting us on the spot.
Go ahead and get some points, throwaway kids. Let's get some interaction.
And hit up the Facebook page with names for our mascot.
Yes,
we will be picking the best one in a couple weeks as soon as we get this guy drawn.
Yep.
So remember, he is a crow-coon.
We would like him to be holding a lighter.
Yeah,
these
a lighter.
There are little details.
He's going to be in a dumpster, popping up out of the dumpster, holding a lighter as though he's about to start a dumpster fire. So that's him. So give us a name.
Yes, everyone, thank you so much for being here with us.
Yes.
I hope this touches your life in some way, even if it just makes you laugh.
Yeah.
Like Robin Williams.
That's what we're here for, is we're just trying to spread a little love and spread a little knowledge and hopefully spread some conversations out there. I love the fact that somebody looked up octopuses. Yes.
They did. This is the feedback I'm getting. I'm just
throwaway kids, you're the best audience we could ask for.
Absolutely. Everyone have a good evening.
Bye.